Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from today, I hope you hit the subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at consequenceofsound.net. And that means whether you're checking us out on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, on YouTube or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from, you can hit the subscribe button at any of those places. I'm Kyle Meredith. It's a special trio episode today. Going to be talking with Alejandro Escovedo, River Wireless, and Marcus King. All put out records recently, all with heavy themes in their own way. In fact, we're going to start with Alejandro Escovedo and his writing partner, Don Antonio. They stopped into the WFPK studios on International Clash Day to talk about the new record, The Crossing. Now, this is a record that deals a lot with immigration. It's a concept record about two young men, one Mexican and one Italian, making their way across the border. Now, this is stories personal to their own histories, and they're going to tell us about how that all lines up, which, of course, is a timely story, especially right now with everything that we're hearing in the news about immigration. Now, the two characters, much like the two songwriters, also have ties to punk, a love for punk. Alejandro Escovedo comes from a punk background, coming from the Nuns back in the 70s. It's a nice kind of coincidence that he ends up in my studio on International Clash Day. So we talk about those early punk days. We talk about the importance of the Clash and how it's inspired him throughout his career and how it should inspire us all to lead better lives. Getting us started here, it's Kyle Meredith with Alejandro Escovedo.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. You and your band's going to be out to headliners tonight.
That's right.
Playing, you get the details on that at WFPK.org as well. And behind a fantastic record called The Crossing, which
Thank
we've
you.
Loved around here.
Thank you.
I mean, be pumping out music this powerful, you know.
Well, thank you very much.
Still to find that fire. And you know, we were talking off mic a little bit, and the album that you've done, and a lot of the songs in the past too, but especially the album, kind of ties in to, of course, what this day represents, right?
Very much so, I would think. Yeah, you know, I mean, the story that Antonio, my friend here, Antonio Gramantieri, and I kind of thought up was a story about two young boys. One is from southern Italy. One, his name is Salvo. And the other boy is a young boy from northern Mexico in a little town called Saltillo in the state of Coahuila. His name is Diego. And they both meet in Galveston, Texas, where they're working at an Italian restaurant, Salvo's uncle's Italian restaurant. And it's there that they begin to realize that they have common interests. And the foremost interest is that of American punk rock music, right? So they know their history. They know their music very well. They also love beat poetry and the free poetry of the 60s and late 50s. And they love the cinema of Sam Peckinpah and John Cassavetes. And they go looking for this America that they believe exists. And what they find, you know, obstacles along the way, the America that they find is not as receptive to these ideas as they had dreamed. And so they're caught in situations that are actually life-threatening at times and very kind of like put out of their element at times, you know, because along the way they lose a lot. Not only have they left their family and loved ones and, you know, culture, language, and food behind, but somehow along the, as they become on this journey, they become young men into men, right? You know, they're growing up and they lose their innocence along the way, you know.
And this couldn't, I can't imagine this was just coincidentally timed that a record like this would come out right now. Does that where the seeds of the record comes from, just what we're living at the moment?
Well, you know, I mean, it came naturally because Antonio is from Italy. My father was from Mexico, the same town that we placed Diego in, Saltillo. And I've always written about immigration. I mean, I wrote a play about my dad called By the Hand of the Father. And I've done, you know, written a lot of songs. My songs Wave and, you know, Sally Was a Cop. They all deal with Mexico and the environment that people have to live in this day and age, you know. And so these young boys, you know, the first project, which was By the Hand of the Father, was about my dad and older men who were born at the turn of the century. And it follows their journey across the border, which in those days, I mean, you have to remember that my father was born in 1907. He crossed the border and he was 12 years old. So 1919, 1920, he crossed the border was a very much an invisible line at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And again, you have to keep in mind that in the Southwest, Mexico was Texas, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. It was huge, right? So the identity thing was very strange. You know, I don't know if you ever read the book Stranger in My Own Land, you know, but it basically addresses that, you know, because when they crossed in those days, there was an invisible line, really, and it still felt like Mexico. The language was the same. The food was the same. The environment was the same as they had known. So but these two young boys are coming over for more of an aesthetic journey. And to follow their dreams, really, is what they're coming in for.
And I do love the name checks that go on through this. I mean, you mentioned those beat poets and Outlaw for You. Of course, you're dropping Kerouac and Ginsberg, which are, you know, I follow those proverbial roads quite a bit, you know, in my youth as well. When we hear about this stuff, of course, in Louisville, Kentucky, we're hearing it from way down the line.
Right.
You know, what's happening with borders, with governments, with personal lives. But I mean, you're all still touched, you know, in the moments in a lot closer way than we are. I have to imagine like this still impacts you to this day, right?
Well, I think, Antonio, if you want to address this too, because in Italy, they're going through the same problems that we are. I mean, they've elected a very right wing
Yeah, or at least something that that's taking things in that direction, right, even without knowing. And I think the main thing was that when we got troubles, we tend to think that it's the trouble of our country or something that is specifically about us. But then if we just open the, if we just see things from a little bit from above, we see that this kind of issue always been there because people moved from day one. And just as Italians, we've been on both sides of the of a border, like when we were trying to go for greener pastures in America or in Northern Europe. And now that we face the same thing with people from Africa coming up, and we've been both character in the in the story. And that's that tells us this thing tend to repeat. And this is one of the reasons we didn't want to place the story exactly in a specific moment in space and time, just like because the feelings, we believe, they were the same. We had a conversation while we were doing the record with, it's a story that is in the DNA of human beings. It's not really specific about what's happening in America
right
today. It's something that is a human...
it's a timeless story.
Unfortunately.
Know? Yeah.
I mean, I hope, by this point we would be so much further, you know,
exactly,
the one world idea.
But, you know, it hasn't worked out that way. And so we're faced with problems. I mean, the fact that there's thousands of children being detained at the border in cages, basically, right, is horrendous. I mean, it's just inhumane. And the fact that now I've heard on the news that they don't even know how to locate a lot of these young kids and reconnect them with their families and their parents. So the cruelty in immigration, you know, the thing that's interesting about the story that we wrote to me is that we wanted it to be timeless because we feel it's a human story, more so than just an Italian story or a Mexican story. But it's all of us come from somewhere else, regardless of what anyone is, you know, tends to believe. We all come from somewhere else. Ideally, we are all one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to place these borders, to erect these borders is what causes the problem a lot of times, you know, right? So, like, the story for us began with man traveling to find greener pastures, hunting seasons, weather, temperature, whatever it was they were looking for, you know, in order to survive. And once borders came up, it became a different story altogether. And, you know, America is a wonderful and beautiful experiment, but it's based on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
The whole basis of this country is immigration.
Right.
And in this album, there's a song called Rio Navidad, in which the character, Diego, you know, says to a man who's been very rude to him in a racist way, you know, if you want to get down to it, you're the one who came over across the Atlantic. I mean, you're the immigrant,
right,
you know. My family has DNA and codex that is here for centuries, right? You know, so it's just an unfortunate way to view the world, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite moments of the record, too.
Well, thank you.
Alejandro Escovedo and Don Antonio tonight at Headliners, the details at WFPK.org. Alejandro's got this great new record called The Crossing, and we're so lucky to have you here and honored to have you here in town. And especially for International Clash Day, we were talking a little bit about that at the beginning, and you don't have any direct ties to The Clash, but this band must have meant something.
Absolutely. You know, they're an amazing band that I did get to see live, and it was really one of the great rock and roll shows I've ever seen.
Oh,
and,
man,
you know, my brother, actually, Javier, he was in a band called The Zeros, and they played with The Clash in San Francisco. They did a show with them in San Francisco, which was a really cool kind of show because, and this speaks so highly of The Clash also, but it wasn't on their tour schedule necessarily, but the kids told them about this place that it was Temple Beautiful, and they hung out. It was Jim Jones's old place, you know, Jim Jones who led the mass suicide.
Right.
Yeah. But it was his old place, and they told him that the kids were having punk rock shows there, and these kids went to them and said, you know, would you guys play? And they actually came and played, you know. And I remember, I think the Dills played and the Zeros played, my brother's band, yeah.
What era was that?
I'm not sure. You know, it was 77, 78, somewhere around there.
Right.
I had already left, I believe, by that time.
Yeah.
So it must have been around 78, yeah.
But what a time to see. I mean, you were part of the scene, though, in a similar way. I mean, I think it's talked about, you know, your punk rock roots.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and because we started playing, the Nuns started forming around 75, 76. So when we started to see that the Clash and the Pistols were playing, you know, and all this stuff, it gave us a sense that we were part of something that was bigger than we were, obviously. And, you know, the Ramones came through and they were highly influential, you know. Mm-hmm. Patti Smith had come through before that, you know. So all of that was leading up to what became the punk rock explosion around 76, 77, you know, through 78. And then 78, well, actually it was, right around 77, 78, when the Pistols' last show in San Francisco, we opened up that show at Winterland, the Nuns did, right? But at that point, we could see that there was something happening that was different than what we had created previous to that. You know, it became much more suburban, more male, kind of testosterone-driven. I think that was the birth of hardcore, what they called hardcore, you know. But in the beginning, it was very much like what the Clash created in London, you know. There was a lot of women involved. It was very all sorts of races and colors involved. And it was all about expressing yourself, you know. And the Clash really inspired that more so than maybe any other band, you know, because they were more open musically than other bands were, too. They led us in those directions, too. A lot of kids to dub and reggae and African music and, you know, the Sandinistas and all this stuff that, you know, that maybe a lot of kids didn't know about growing up in the suburbs, you know, and suddenly we're aware of, you know, and we can thank Strummer and the boys for that, you know.
I mean, certainly, you know, I came years later
yeah.
and they were still one of the ones that turned me on to a lot of the stuff you just said right there. I was still learning it, you know, in the 90s by that point. So,
well, highly influential. I mean, you know, think about what, you know. In the same way that the Stones, you know, brought blues back to America, I think that the Clash gave us a sense of what the world was about,
yeah.
what world music was, you know, because look at how early they embraced hip-hop and everything, you know.
It's true.
So they were important, extremely important. Without them, I don't know that we would have gotten as far as we'd gotten in opening the doors to a larger variety of music, yeah. you know.
Now I'm going to tie that back into The Crossing with this new record right here,
sure.
because on the lead single, Sonica USA, we hear a lot of these names
yeah.
in that way that you're talking. We hear about the MC5 and Wayne Kramer
right.
happens to be on the track as well. Shout out there. I had Wayne on my show recently as well with his
Joe
new book.
Guitar Doors.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, with everything. But this is sort of where the lines blur a bit, right? Because you have these two characters that are touting these, you know, these musical gods, which yeah. are, you know, your peers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and your own heroes, I'm guessing, to a point. I don't know.
Well, you know, when Antonio made the record, we also made a wish list of people yeah. to play. And go ahead, you can.
I mean, I think
we got the cream of the crop, pretty
yeah.
much. You
know? And there is a reason, because the record, even if it's a story, timely, is based in America. Because America, obviously, also from my standpoint, from my Italian standpoint, was the place where all those influences came together and created a language that was a new one. Mm-hmm. And it was just the sum of what came in from the outside the borders, obviously. And so there's a reason if they look for the promised land here and not somewhere else, because it's the land where art opened the door for a social model that for them was what they wanted to feel like home, what the kind of environment, cultural environment where they want to place themselves.
That was the thing, because like for us, the characters find their community, that the America that they're looking for doesn't necessarily exist. Mm. But where they find it is in the punk rock community. They're embraced there, and they feel accepted there, and they feel that they can express themselves there, you know. So when they say, we love the Stooges and we hate you too, you know, a friend of mine thought it meant you too, like, you know, people, but it's the band, you too. It's because they want this primal, hardcore thing. You know, they don't want a stadium band with, you know, multi-screens and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Pyrotechnics. They want the real thing, right? You know, so to them, the Stooges and the MC5 and, you know, all the bands that came before them that were like that, like Question Mark and the Mysterians or the Seeds and Count Five, I mean, you know, the New York Dolls, the Velvet Underground, were the bands that they draw their inspiration from. Yeah.
Salvation and the Music. I'm going to get off track just for a second.
Sure.
Debate here, long-time debate. Were you two ever a punk band?
Not in my opinion, but, you know,
I think we're a punk band when we play in duo.
No. He meant the band U2.
Ah, no. Again, I did. Yeah, I you just said that, and I did it in reverse. Yeah. When I was a kid, really a kid, they were everywhere. So you don't know if you like a mountain or not. It's just around you. You have to face the scenario you grew up.
Well, everything that I know about them tells me that they weren't a punk band.
All right. Thank you all both so much. Alejandro Escovedo and Don Antonio tonight at Headliners. The details at WFPK.org.
Well, thank you very much.
That's such a fun one.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you both for stopping by here and for the important writing that you still do.
I'll put
that weight on it. I really do mean that.
Thank you. Everyone should be inspired by The Clash to go out and be active in your community, your neighborhood, you know, whatever it is that you do. But we can make a difference. And The Clash were inspired by that.
Alejandro Escovedo and Don Antonio talking about their new record, The Crossing. Now we're going to stick to a similar space for our second interview for today's episode. The band River Wireless, just last year, 2018, released a record called Kindness a Rebel. I talked with Daniel Sharon about it, a record that was actually made on the border between Texas and Mexico in a border town that would end up in the news in a very big way. In fact, we stick with politics beyond that. Talk a little bit about how they were impacted with Facebook ads just being political. And on the less political side, the new record is also a big jump sonically for the band. We get some stories behind some of the songs as well. It's Kyle Meredith with River Wireless.
Hey, Kyle.
Let's talk about this record, Kindness a Rebel, which is, it's an exciting record. It's beautifully done and beautifully recorded, and the songwriting is the best that you all have ever accomplished yet. I mean, all the compliments on this new record.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I guess the easy part is to start with that title, too, because not all the time does a title summarize a record, but I get the feeling that it really does this time around. Is that right?
Yeah. We think that all the songs on the record touch back to that central theme.
And what is that theme, to spell it out?
Oh, I think just like it says, that kindness sometimes is a more rebellious cause than it might seem on the surface. But sometimes your first reaction may be one of more self-righteousness or self-satisfaction or greed or any of those types of things. But sometimes to flip the page over and to rebel against that instinct or rebel against what society might be pushing you to do, and just to reach out and talk to one another and be kind is a rebellious act.
Isn't that unfortunate?
It is. I mean, I think it's part of human nature, and in some respect, I think it's been exacerbated recently. It seems like, at least in our country, it seems like in the past year or two or three, this whole divide has increased, and it seems harder to reach across the aisle, if you will. But I think it is part of basic human nature to also be kind. So just to find, reacquaint yourself with that side of yourself.
Yeah, I've read you all talking about it as, you know, the American experiment, which I've sort of referred to myself in the past. Whereas I'm sort of feeling a bit half empty here when I talk about the American experiment, I want to say has failed. Or maybe the human experiment has failed, humanity as we know it. I don't quite get the sense that that's your take on it, though.
No, I think everything has its cycles. And I mean, there's a deep part of me that is looking at the long term of humanity and feels a little pessimistic in the way that it feels like we might be a parasite on our own home, like a termite eating the house it lives in. But on the other hand, I know that individually we're actually a pretty brilliant species, and hopefully we have time enough to turn around. At this point, I'm kind of speaking about like global warming and population growth and these long term things that are going to be a bigger and bigger threat to our life as humans, and not to mention all the lives that we're surrounded by that aren't humans. So that part of me is a little nervous and pessimistic, but I hope that we're smart enough to turn it around, because I know individually all of us are, but we have a little bit of a blind spot as a group.
You know, four songwriters in the band, these themes, they thread throughout it and to each one of your songs. I mean, did you find that you were already in sync thematically? Was this something that was talked about going through? Like, what if we did more or less a concept record?
No, we never really talked about it. We had a pretty good batch of songs I'd say we came into the studio with twice as many songs that we ended up with on the record. And I think a lot of the choices, again, like we never really specifically discussed it, but I think we saw the record moving in a direction and just naturally chose the ones that grouped together thematically like that.
And you hear it pretty quickly, too. I mean, you know, Born in the Right Country, quite the statement, you know, as we're talking about privilege and everything that goes along with that. That one's not your right. Who did that one? Who started that one, I should say?
Ryan wrote the lyrics to that one for the most part.
And can you speak to the story about it at all?
Yeah, I mean, that song is, it's about luck and just what card you're drawn or what card you draw when you're born or you know, in life, there's a lot of things that decide which how your life turns out that you have no control over. And a lot of people find themselves on the good side of that luck and a lot find themselves on the bad side of that luck. And that's not to say that you're stuck in one place, but to borrow a phrase from another song on the record, if the wind's pushing at your back, you don't really notice it. And you don't realize how much that's helping you down the path of life, if you will.
And when you're talking about, you know, you're not stuck, you can escape. But as we're seeing for folks who do escape or try to escape, they end up in these horrible situations that we're putting families in. I bring that up because, as I read, I mean, you all recorded this record close to the Mexican border, right?
Yes. Strangely enough, we recorded it in Tornillo, Texas, which is now that it's this little tiny town. You know, it's got a Dollar General and a little school, and I don't know the official population size, but it's small. And I don't think many people really talked about Tornillo very much, but recently that's the town that's been on the news because of the tents that were built for the immigrants that were being detained. That's literally in Tornillo, the exact town we recorded the record in. And yeah, it's a really surreal thing to realize.
I mean, you are, you know, recording this record. Was everything happening? Was any of that happening, you know, while it was going on? Were you all able to experience that and see the beginnings of all of this that we're seeing now?
No. When we were recording the record, the studio is actually centered in a compound within a pecan orchard, and you could go to the edge of the pecan orchard and find yourself at the fence. And if you spent too much time down there, like, you know, a few minutes, a border patrol agent would come up to you. This never happened to me, but that was just kind of standard practice at that time. We didn't see any actual, we didn't see anything quite as dramatic as what we're talking about now.
But still, I mean, for such a small place in the world, and, you know, to you sort of retroactively being part of the center of all that, I mean, just this magnetism, I guess, to that area.
No, very surreal. Yeah, a friend of ours, who actually told us about the studio in the first place, his name is David Garza, and he's an extremely talented musician who lives in Austin, but he's also closely tied with the studio in Tornillo, and he's been going out there and, like, writing songs and performing there and making videos, and to see him in the same spot, literally with his back to the border at certain times, has been, again, a very surreal realization to know that, like, not even a year ago, we were just there having the time of our life making a record, and fully aware that just across the border is one of the most dangerous cities in Mexico. And to see it all come to a head like it did is, like I said, a very surreal realization.
Now, I'll hit on sort of this subject with one more thing, because you all, so you know, you're promoting your record, and you know, in the ways band promote the record, and one of those things is Facebook, and you do an ad, and there's a denial. What's the story here? Because I've only heard the brief of it anyway.
Oh, it's just, you know, how on Facebook you can pay Facebook, I don't know, like $20 or so, and they boost your post and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Well, we tried to do that with our video, and the boost side of it got denied. In other words, they wouldn't take our money to spread the word that our video is out. And they did that on the grounds of it being too political. And at first it was surprising that video could be seen in that light. Of course, it is a politically involved video, but we didn't see it as being like something that would be blocked in that way. But, you know, the more we thought about it, the more we realized that That's Facebook trying to do its job to weed out politics from at least monetarily, their involvement in spreading that kind of narrative in any way. So I appreciate it. I appreciate the end result, although it was definitely surprising at first.
I mean, it just on the grounds that, you know, for the place that sort of spread all the politics, you know, around for a few years, that it's something like this that I won't call innocent, but mild in that grand scope of conversation.
Yeah, the surprising part was it felt to us like we're legitimately trying to have a conversation, versus a lot of the things that has come to light that Facebook was involved in are not so much a conversation, but just spreading false information. But I do understand that they've got to draw a line somewhere. And
you're on the other side of that line.
They're working on it. Yeah, you know, that's fine if it works out that way. I'd rather be on the other side of a line than there not to be a line. So I appreciate it in the long run.
Well, the other thing, you know, that you notice really quickly about this, I mean, whether or not it's warranted or not, you all really quickly got sort of stamped with folk or a subgenre of folk anyway. When I listened to this record, that was my first thought, is like, whatever you were before, you're not that so much anymore. Like, this isn't a folk record, not in any traditional sense anyway, other than, you know, maybe the actual traditional sense of telling stories and that. But musically speaking, you know, this is something, it's complex. It's something really, really different. Like, I don't know, can you pinpoint to something happening between, you know, 2 years ago and now that kind of gave this album its musical structure?
No, I couldn't pinpoint it. I think all of us are just constantly listening to a lot of different things, and whatever we're absorbing then at that point comes out as we write music. Again, it's not typically talked about. It's not intentional. It's not intentional in a way that we've like written a thesis statement about how we want to pursue the record. It's just all kind of following your instincts and going with the flow of what's happening and following leads when they show up. And I think part of that is we've never considered ourselves a folk band, I guess. So I get why people have said that, but we hear that and we're like, okay, yeah, that's what people refer to us in some capacity, but we've never really embraced that label, and there's nothing wrong with that label, but we've just never identified with it on a, you know, 100%. And so I guess this is just, we're just being ourselves and doing what we like to do, and it just turned out the way it did.
Yeah, well, you hear, like, you know, it's Serious Groove and Failing Farm and the drive of Van Dyke Brown. I mean, there are some great moments spread all throughout this record. I really do enjoy it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And that's that. It was a pleasure talking to you, man. And again, all the compliments, Kindness a Rebel. I hope I get to see it around the Louisville parts sometime soon to check this out.
All righty. Yeah, well, thanks for chatting. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
All right. You too, Dan. We'll see you around. Take care.
Right on. Take care. Thank you.
And my thanks to Daniel from River Wireless. Again, that record, Kindness a Rebel. Now to part three for today's interview, Marcus King of the Marcus King Band. The blues phenom just released an album called Carolina Confessions that deals with its own big issues. In fact, when Marcus says he needs to get things off of his chest for his confessions, one of those subjects being suicide. It's also a record that was written in France. Kind of interesting, being it's got a Southern rock sound to it. We also get into working with super producer Dave Cobb, co-writing with the Black Keys' Dan Auerbach, and taking a lot of inspiration from the Black Crowes as he prepared for a tour with Chris Robinson. It's Kyle Meredith with Marcus King.
Hey, Kyle, how you doing? It's Marcus.
I noticed that all three of your albums had been released in October as they came out. Is that a coincidence, or you just like to keep things spooky?
Well, I guess spooky's always all right. But I don't know, man. I think that may be something from the label. I guess they like to get it out towards the beginning of the last quarter. And there must be some kind of strategy there.
There's about three records now, and every single one of them with an October release. Like, that's consistency right there.
Yeah, man.
Let's hit that title first, Carolina Confessions. As you've said in other interviews, you had a lot of things to get off of your chest. It makes it a concept record, right?
Yeah, I guess it, in a lot of ways, yeah, it does. You know, it's a breakup record, just a different kind of breakup record. It's more of a accepting responsibility for your own actions type of a thing. And it also speaks a little on leaving home and, you know, finding yourself out there.
As you're focusing on your songwriting this time around, did you feel like you needed a concept to keep your focus, to give you a direction to go in, or is it just the way that the cards fell?
I was really happy that the concept kind of found me, and I was able to build around that. And I had been bringing in songs into the studio, and the concept kind of found me that way, because all the songs kind of tied into this grand scheme of Carolina Confessions, and it gave me a better idea or a better way to paint the picture I was trying to.
I read that you wrote a lot of the, did you write a lot of the songs in France, or was just some of the songwriting happened up there?
Yeah, a good few of the tunes I wrote just kind of in hotel rooms and backstage areas while we were over there doing our tour this past March, I think it was.
I mean, you hear a lot about how sometimes location can influence a song, but I don't know. Do you have any of French or European sounds that you can hear creep into these songs at all?
Not much. I'll tell you what was really, I think, kind of unbeknownst to me, inspiring the way that I was approaching this music was give you an idea of what I was doing. I was really kind of stressed out. So that really encouraged me to write more, because that's my main way to release tension on my heart and my soul and my spirit. So I was doing this tour, and I was also learning a lot of Black Crowes music, because I was getting ready to do this tour with Chris Robinson that we did. And that's what I think really was really inspiring to me, was learning all their music, actually.
You can definitely hear some of that in there. I mean, and I think that falls in line with, you know, Southern music too, which has a long tradition, although it's, you know, you could say that about any basic genre, but something about Southern music, it's a really special, specific tradition that it becomes more about the story. I mean, the guitar solos and the riffs are there, but it has to be about the story as well, right?
Right, yeah, I think that's the truth, man. You got to have a story behind it.
And there are some stories on here. I'll bring up Goodbye Carolina, because I think that's one of the most heartbreaking ones we hear about. That touches on suicide.
Yeah, it does. That's been something I've written about before. It's the first time I've ever spoken about it. I think it's I think it's something that we need to be aware that it's happening, and it doesn't really have a face. You know, you never really see it coming. And we had a good friend of ours that's not with us anymore, and I wrote the song from his perspective. And he kind of, I feel more like he wrote it. He kind of came to me in a dream of some sort in one of my hotel rooms in France. And that's how the song came to be.
Beautiful, beautiful song. It really is.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
Would you say that there are more goodbyes than hellos on this record?
That's tough to say, because I guess collectively the entire record is meant to be a bit more uplifting, but I guess it's kind of how you like to interpret it. I guess for me, you know, anything that I write, I like 100 different people to listen and have 100 different interpretations of what it could mean, or, you know, just because I say exactly what the song's about, that's just what it was for me.
Right.
It should be something different for everybody.
Must say something about the mood I've been in lately then. And we should also mention Dave Cobb. You know, everybody's a fan of Dave Cobb these days. We surely are. Did he add anything that you hadn't been able to do before?
Dave was a really great asset on this record. He came in, and he's very calm and collected with the way that he works, and he was very very aware of the fact that we're a band, you know, and it's not just me and some session players. So he was very collaborative in the way of pushing everybody to really get the best parts that they could on the song that we were working on. We would start every morning or afternoon, because Dave likes to do the Brian Wilson approach, or the John Prine, however, yeah, and start about 1 p.m., 2 p.m. So we would sit down on the couch, and I would write or play a song. And if he had any notes just on the basic structure of the tune, we would go over it there. We would change around the verse, or we'd say, no, this could be better for the chorus if we added this there. You know, make some really minor adjustments. And then right there, the horns would come up with their lines, and everybody would kind of learn the song. Because the majority of the music, I wrote by myself, So I hadn't presented it even to the band yet. So I really went in there cold with all these tunes. And he was a really big asset in letting us act as a band once we had all of our parts. He wouldn't really step in the middle of us in our, you know, arbitration process that we usually have of anything that could be going on in the studio. He kind of let us figure things out, and then he would, you know, jump in. Yeah. It was a great environment.
And I'll bring up, you know, one of those songs, I guess, that maybe you didn't bring in at the beginning was How Long, because that ended up being a co-write with Dan Auerbach, as I read. How did that come about, and how was it writing in that style with him?
That was great, man. It was really a good couple of days. It was just a writing session that came about. Dan does a lot of writing in Nashville, and he reached out to me and asked if I would want to come and do some writing with them. And I said, we're with him. And I said, absolutely. So I flew from Phoenix, Arizona to Nashville, and we did 2 days of writing, and we were writing with Pat McLaughlin on this particular day. And we had like 4 or 5 different ideas that we left the studio with. And that one was the one that kept kind of ringing in my ear. And I flew from Nashville to Paris, and we did that whole tour of Paris. So I had all the other tunes I was working on, and I had that one still kind of ringing in my head. So we started playing it live and testing it out on that tour that we were doing. And we came back to the studio, and we focused on all the songs that we wanted to get done. And we noticed that we had a day in the studio that we didn't have really anything to work on. So at that point, I kind of said, you know, I got this tune that me and Dan and Mackie wrote. Let's give it a go.
And there it is for everybody to hear now.
Yep.
Yeah. Dude, I really do love this record, Carolina Confessions. You've done an outstanding job. And I'll also mention at the end here that we're excited to have you in town, too, because you're going to be bringing it all to the Mercury Ballroom, which is right next door to us on December 4th. Really looking forward to that, man.
Yeah, me too, brother. We can't wait.
Yeah. All right, Marcus. Thank you so much for calling in today. We'll be seeing you soon.
Thanks a lot, man. We'll see you all in Louisville.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye now.
Marcus King of the Marcus King Band talking about the record Carolina Confessions. And my thanks again to River Wireless and Alejandro Escovedo and Don Antonio for those calls as well. And for you for subscribing to this little podcast right here. If you haven't done so already, please do hit that subscribe button in front of you, whether you're checking us out on Spotify or YouTube, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Acast, Podchaser, wherever you get your podcasts from. After that, WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. Head over to consequenceofsound.net for all your music and film news needs. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook.com/Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.